a shade too softly. Shall I find another use for you here at Morath? Dorian knew precisely what sort of uses the man would have. He lifted supplicating hands.
I am your servant, my lord.
Erewhon stared at him for long heartbeats. Then he said,
Go.
Dorian straightened, letting Erewhon stride a few more feet toward the tower. The blank-faced guards posted at its door stepped aside as he approached.
Do you truly hate them?
Dorian blurted. Erewhon half turned toward him. Dorian asked,
The humans, Aelin Galathinius, Dorian Havilliard, all of them. Do you truly hate them? Why do you make us suffer so greatly?
Erewhon's golden eyes guttered.
They would keep me from my brothers, he said.
I will let nothing stand in the way of my reunion with them. Surely, there might be another way to reunite you, without such a great war.
Erewhon's stare swept over him, and Dorian held still, willing his scent to remain unremarkable, the shift to keep its form.
Where would the fun be in that?
The Volg King asked, and turned back toward the hall.
Did the former King of Alderaan ask such questions?
The words broke from him. Erewhon again paused.
He was not so faithful a servant as you might believe. And look what it cost him.
He fought you.
Not quite a question.
He never bowed. Not completely.
Dorian was stunned enough that he opened his mouth. But Erewhon began walking again and said without looking back,
You ask many questions, Vernon. A great many questions. I find them tiresome.
Dorian bowed, even with Erewhon's back to him. But the Volg King continued on, opening the tower door to reveal a lightless interior, and shut it behind him. A clock chimed midnight, off-kilter and odious, and Dorian strode back down the hall, finding another route to Maeve's chambers. A quick shift in a shadowed alcove had him scuttling along the floor again, his mouse's eyes seeing well enough in the dark. Only embers remained in the fireplace when he slid beneath the door. In the dark, Maeve said from the bed,
You are a fool.
Dorian shifted again, back into his own body.
For what?
I know where you went, who you saw it.
Her voice slithered through the darkness.
You are a fool.
When he didn't reply, she asked,
Did you plan to kill him?
I don't know.
You couldn't face him and live.
Casual, stark words. Dorian didn't need to touch Damaris to know they were true.
He would have put another collar around your throat.
I know.
Perhaps he should have learned where the Volg King kept them and destroyed the cache.
This alliance shall not work if you are sneaking off and acting like a reckless boy,
Maeve hissed.
I know.
He repeated, the words hollow. Maeve sighed when he didn't say more.
Did you at least find what you were seeking?
Dorian lay down before the fire, curling an arm beneath his head.
No.
Chapter 72. From a distance, the Farian Gap did not look like the outpost for a good number of Morath's aerial legion. Nor did it look, Nezrin decided, like it had been breeding wyverns for years. She supposed that the lack of any obvious signs of a Volg King's presence was part of why it had remained secret for so long. Sailing closer to the towering twin peaks that flanked either side, the Northern Fang on one, the Omega on the other, and separated the White Fangs from the Rune Mountains, Nezrin could barely make out the structures built into either one. Like the Aridan Eyrie, and yet not at all. The Aridan's mountain home was full of motion and life. What had been built in the gap, connected by a stone bridge near its top, was silent, cold and bleak. Snow half-blinded Nezrin, but Salki swept toward the peaks, staying high. Borte and Arcus came in from the north, little more than dark shadows amid the whipping white. Far behind them, out in the valley plain beyond the gap, one half of their army waited, the Rooks with them. Waited for Nezrin and Borte, along with the other scouts who had gone out, to report back that the time was ripe to attack. They'd made the river crossing under cover of darkness last night, and those the Rooks could not carry had been brought over on boats. A precarious position to be in on that plain before the gap. The Avery forked at their backs, effectively hemming them in. Much of it had been frozen, but not nearly thick enough to risk crossing on foot. Should this battle go poorly, there would be nowhere to run. Nezrin nudged Salki, coming around the northern fang from the southern side. Far below, the whirling snows cleared enough to reveal what seemed to be a back gate into the mountain. No sign of sentries or any wyverns. Perhaps the weather had driven them all inside. She glanced southward, into the fangs, but there was no sign of the second half of their army, marching north through the peaks themselves to come at the gap from the western entrance. A far more treacherous journey than the one they'd made. But if they timed it right, if they drew out the host in the gap onto the plain just before the others arrived from the west, they might crush Morath's forces between them. And that was without the unleashed power of Aelin Galathinius and her consort and court. Salki arced around the northern fang. Distantly, Nezrin could make out Borte doing the same around the Omega. But there was no sign of their enemy. And when Nezrin and Borte did another pass through the Farian Gap, even going so far as to soar between the two peaks, they found no sign either, as if the enemy had vanished. The white fangs were utterly unforgiving. The wild men who led them kept the mountains from being fatal, knowing which passes might be wiped out by snow, which might have an unsteady ice shelf, which were too open to any eyes flying overhead. Even with the army trailing behind, Kaol marveled at the speed of their travel, at how, after 3 days, they cleared the mountains themselves and stepped onto the flat, snow-blasted western plains beyond. He'd never set foot in the territory, though it was technically his. The official border of Otterlin claimed the plains past the fangs for a good distance before they yielded to the unnamed territories of the wastes. But it still felt like the wastes. Eerily quiet and sprawling, a strange expanse that stretched unbreaking to the horizon. Even the stoic Khaganate warriors did not look too long toward the wastes at their left as they rode northward. At night, they huddled closer to their fires. All of them did. Irene clung a bit tighter at night, whispering about the strangeness of the land, its hollow silence. As if the land itself does not sing, she'd said a few times now, shuddering as she did. A far better place, Kaol thought as they rode northward, skirting the edge of the fangs on their right, for Erewhon to make his empire. Hell, they might have given it to him if he'd set up his fortress deep on the plain and kept to it.
We're a day out from the gap,
one of the wild men, Kai, said to Kaol, as they rode through an unusually sunny morning.
We'll camp south of the northern fang tonight, and tomorrow morning's march will take us into the gap itself.
There was another reason the wild men had allied with them, beyond the territory they stood to gain. Witches had hunted their kind this spring. Entire clans and camps left in bloody ribbons. Many had been reduced to cinders, and the few survivors had whispered of a dark-haired woman with unholy power. Kaol was willing to bet it had been Kaltane, but had not told the wild men that particular threat, at least, had been erased, or had incinerated herself in the end. It wouldn't matter to them anyway. Of the 200 or so wild men who had joined their army since they'd left Aniel, all had come to the Farian Gap to extract vengeance on the witches, on Morath. Kaol refrained from mentioning that he himself had killed one of their kind almost a year ago. It might as well have been a decade ago, for all that had happened since he'd killed Cain during his duel with Aelin. Yulmas was still weeks away, if they survived long enough to celebrate it. Kaol said to the slim, bearded man, who made up for his lack of clansman traditional bulk with quick wit and sharp eyes, "Is there a place that might hide an army this large tonight?" Kai shook his head.
"Not this close. Tonight will be the greatest risk."
Kaol glanced to the distant healer's wagons where Irene rode, working on any soldiers who had fallen ill or injured on the trek. He hadn't seen her since they'd awoken, but he'd known she'd spent their ride today healing. The tightness in his spine grew with each mile.
"We'll just have to pray," said Kaol,
turning to the towering mountain taking shape before them.
"The gods don't come to these lands,"
was all Kai said, before he fell back with a group of his own people. A horse eased up beside his own, and he found Aelin bundled in a fur-lined cloak, a hand on Goldrin's hilt. Gavriel rode behind her, Fenris at his side. The former kept an eye upon the western plains, the latter monitoring the wall of peaks to their right. Both golden-haired fey males remained silent, however, as Aelin frowned at Kai's disappearing form. That man has a flair for the dramatic that should have earned him a place on some of Rifthold's finest stages.
"Fine praise indeed, coming from you,"
she winked, patting Goldrin's ruby pommel. The stone seemed to flare in response. "I know a kindred spirit when I see one." Despite the battle that waited ahead, Kaol chuckled. But then Aelin said, "Rowan and the cadre have been tunneling into their power for the past few days." She nodded over her shoulder to Fenris and Gavriel, then to where Rowan rode at the head of the company, the Fey Prince's silver hair bright as the sun on snow around them. "So have I. We'll make sure nothing harms this army tonight." A knowing glance toward the healer's wagons. "Certain areas will be especially guarded." Kaol nodded his thanks. Having Aelin able to use her powers, having her companions wielding them too, would make the battle far, far easier. Wyverns might not even be able to get close enough to touch their soldiers if Aelin could blast them from the skies, or Rowan could snap their wings with a gust of wind, or just rip the air from their lungs. He'd seen enough of Fenris's and Gavriel's fighting in Aniel to know that even without as much magic, they'd be lethal. And Lorcan? Kaol didn't look over his shoulder to where Lorcan and Elide rode. The Dark Warrior's powers weren't anything Kaol ever wished to face. With an answering nod, Aelin trotted to Rowan's side, the ruby in Goldrin's hilt like a small sun. Fenris followed, guarding the queen's back even amongst allies. Yet Gavriel remained, guiding his horse beside Farasha. The black mare eyed the warrior's roan gelding, but made no move to bite him, thank the gods. The lion gave him a slight smile.
"I did not have the chance to congratulate you on your happy news."
An odd thing for the warrior to say, given that they'd barely spoken beyond councils, but Kaol bowed his head.
"Thank you."
Gavriel stared toward the snow and mountains, toward the distant north.
"I was not granted the opportunity you have to be present from the start, to see my son grow into a man."
Kaol thought of it, of the life growing in Irene's womb, of the child they'd raise. Thought of what Gavriel had not experienced.
"I'm sorry."
It was the only thing, really, to say. Gavriel shook his head. tawny eyes glowing golden, flecks of emerald emerging in the blinding sun.
I did not tell you for sympathy.
The lion looked at him, and Kaol felt the weight of every one of Gavriel's centuries weighing upon him.
But rather to tell you what you perhaps already know, to savor every moment of it.
Yes.
If they survived this war, he would. Every damn second. Gavriel angled the reins, as if to lead his horse back to his companions, but Kaol said,
I'm guessing that Adian has not made it easy for you to appear in his life.
Gavriel's grave face tightened.
He has every reason not to.
And though Adian was Gavriel's son, Kaol said,
I'm sure you already know this, but Adian is as stubborn and hot-headed as they come.
He jerked his chin toward Aelin, riding ahead, saying something to Fenris that made Rowan snicker and Fenris bark a laugh.
Aelin and Adian might as well be twins.
That Gavriel didn't stop him told Kaol he'd read the lingering wound in the lion's eyes well enough.
Both of them will often say one thing, but mean something else entirely, and then deny it until their last breath.
Kaol shook his head.
Give Adian time. When we reach Orinth, I have a feeling that Adian will be happier to see you than he lets on.
I am bringing back his queen and riding with an army. I think he'd be happy to see his most hated enemy if they did that for him.
Worry paled the lion's tanned features. Not for the reunion, but for what his son might be facing in the north. Kaol considered.
My father is a bastard,
he said quietly.
He has been in my life from my conception. Yet he never once bothered to ask the questions you pose,
Kaol said.
He never once cared enough to do so. He never once worried. That will be the difference.
If Adian chooses to forgive me.
He will,
Kaol said. He'd make Adian do it.
Why are you so certain?
Kaol considered his words carefully before he again met Gavriel's striking gaze.
Because you are his father,
he said.
And no matter what might lie between you, Adian will always want to forgive you.
There it was. His own secret shame, still warring within him after all his father had done, even after the trunk full of his mother's letters.
And Adian will realize, in his own way, that you went to save Aelin not for her sake or Rowan's, but for his. And that you stayed with them and march in this army for his sake, too.
The lion gazed northward, eyes flickering.
I hope you are right.
No attempt at denial. That all Gavriel had done and would do was for Adian alone. That he was marching north into sure hell for Adian. The warrior began to edge his horse past him again. But Kaol found himself saying,
I wish I had been so lucky to have you as my father.
Surprise and something far deeper passed across Gavriel's face. His tattooed throat bobbed.
Thank you. Perhaps it is our lot to never have the fathers we wish, but to still hope they might surpass what they are, flaws and all.
Kaol refrained from telling Gavriel he was already more than enough. Gavriel said quietly,
I shall endeavor to be worthy of my son.
Kaol was about to mutter that Adian had better deem the lion worthy, when the two forms took shape in the skies high above, large, dark, and moving fast. Kaol grabbed for the bow strapped across his back as soldiers cried out. Gavriel's own bow already aimed skyward, but Rowan shouted above the fray,
Hold your fire!
Galloping hooves thundered toward them. Then Aelin and the Fey Prince were there, the latter announcing,
It's Nezrin and Borte.
Within minutes, the two women had descended, their rooks crusted with ice from the air high above the peaks. How bad is it? Aelin asked, now joined by Fenris, Lorkin, and Elide. Borte winced. It makes no sense. None of it. Nezrin explained before Kaol could tell the girl to get to the point.
We've gone through the gap thrice now, even landed in the Omega.
She shook her head.
It's empty.
Empty? Kaol asked. Not a soul there? The Fey warriors glanced to one another at that. A few of the furnaces were still going, so someone must be there, Borte said. But there wasn't one witch or wyvern. Whoever remains behind is minimal, likely no more than trainers or breeders.
The Farian Gap was empty.
The Iron Teeth Legion gone. Rowan scanned the peak ahead.
We need to learn what they know, then.
Nezrin's nod was grim.
Sartak already has people on it. Chapter 73.
Dorian hunted through Morath in 100 different skins, on the silent feet of a cat, or scuttling along the floors as a cockroach, or hanging from a rafter as a bat. He spent the better part of a week listening, looking. Erewhon still remained unaware of his presence. Perhaps the nature of his raw magic indeed provided him with anonymity. And Maeve had only known to recognize it thanks to whatever she'd pried from Aelin's mind. At night, Dorian returned to Maeve's tower chamber, where they would go over all he had seen. What she did during the day to keep Erewhon from noticing the small, ever-changing presence hunting through his halls, she did not reveal. She'd brought the spiders, though. Dorian had heard the servants' terrified whispers about the fleeting portal that the queen had opened to allow in 6 of the creatures to the catacombs, where they, through some terrible magic, allowed in the Volg princesses. Dorian couldn't decide whether it was a relief that he had not encountered these hybrids yet. Though he'd seen the emaciated human bodies, mere husks, that were occasionally hauled down the corridors. Dinner, the guards carrying them had hissed to the petrified servants. To feed a bottomless hunger, to prime them for battle. What the spider princess creations could do, what they would do to his friends in the north? Dorian couldn't stop recalling what Maeve had said to Erewhon, that the Volg princesses had been held here for the second phase of whatever he was planning. Perhaps to ensure that they were well and truly destroyed once the bulk of his armies came through. It honed his focus as he hunted, pushed and nudged him onward, even when reason and instinct told him to flee this place. But he would not, could not without the key. Sometimes, he could have sworn he felt it, the key, the horrible otherworldly presence. But when he'd chase after that wretched power down stairwells and along ancient corridors, only dust and shadows would greet him. Often, it led him back to Erewhon's tower, to the locked iron door and Volg guards posted outside, one of the few remaining places he had not dared to search. Though other possibilities did still remain. The reek from the subterranean chamber reached Dorian long before he soared down the winding stair, the dim passageway cavernous and looming to his fly's senses. It had been the safest form for the day. The kitchen cat had been on the prowl earlier, and the Iron Teeth witches hurried about the keep, readying for what he could only assume was an order to march north. He'd been hunting for the key since dawn, Maeve occupying Erewhon's attention in the western catacombs across the keep, where those spider princesses tested their new bodies. He'd never gone so deep under the keep, beneath the storage rooms, beneath the dungeons. He'd only found the stair by the smell that had leaked from behind the ordinary door at its top, the scent detected by the fly's remarkable sense of smell. He'd passed the door so many times now on his fruitless hunting, deeming it a mere supply closet, until chance had intervened today. Dorian rounded the last turn of the spiral stairs and nearly tumbled from the air as the smell fully hit him. A 1,000 times worse in this form, with these senses. A reek of death, of rot, of hate and despair. The scent that only the Volg could summon. He'd never forget it, had never quite left it behind. Turn back. The warning was a whisper through his mind. Turn back. The lower hall was lit with only a few torches in rusted iron brackets. No guards were posted along its length, or by the lone iron door at its far end. The reek pulsed along the corridor, emanating from that door, beckoning. Would Erewhon leave the key so unguarded? Dorian sent his magic skittering along the hall, testing for any hidden traps. It found none. And when it reached the iron door, it recoiled. It fled. He spooled his power back into himself, tucking it closer. The iron door was dented and scratched with age. 9 locks lay along its edge, each more complicated than the last. Ancient, strange locks. He didn't hesitate. He aimed for the slight gap between the stones and the iron door, and shifted. The fly shrank into a gnat, so small it was nearly a dust mote. He flew beneath the door, blocking out the smell, the terrible pulsing against his blood. It took him a moment to understand what he looked at in the rough-hewn chamber, illuminated by a small lantern dangling from the arched ceiling. A lick of greenish flame danced within. Not a flame of this world. Its light slid over the heap of black stone in the center of the room. Pieces of a sarcophagus. And all around it, built into shelves carved from the mountain itself, gleamed wordstone collars. Only the instincts of his small, inconsequential body kept Dorian in the air, kept him circling the lightless chamber. The rubble in the center of the space. Erewhon's tomb. Directly beneath Morath. The site where Elena and Gavin trapped him and then built the keep atop the sarcophagus that could not be moved. Where all this mess had begun. Where centuries later, his father had claimed he and Parrington ventured in their youth, using the word key to unlock both door and sarcophagus, and unwittingly freed Erewhon. The Demon King had seized the Duke's body. His father... Dorian's heart raced as he passed collar after collar, around and around the room. Erewhon hadn't needed one to contain his father, not when the man possessed no magic in his veins. Yet Erewhon had said that the man hadn't bowed, not wholly, had fought him for decades. He hadn't let himself think on it this past week, on whether his father's final words atop the glass castle had indeed been true. How he'd killed him, without the excuse of the collar to justify it. His head pounded as he continued to circle the tomb. The collars leaked their unholy stench into the world, pulsing in time with his blood. They seemed to sleep, seemed to wait. Did a prince lurk within each one? Or were these shells ready to be filled? Caltaine had warned him of this chamber. The place where Erewhon would bring him should he be caught. Why Erewhon had chosen this place to store his collars? Perhaps it was a sanctuary, if such a thing could exist for a Volg king. Where Erewhon might come to gaze upon the method of his own imprisonment and remind himself that he would not be contained again. That he'd use these collars to enslave those who'd attempt to seal him back into the sarcophagus. Dorian's magic thrashed, impatient and frantic. Was there a collar in here designated for him, for Aelin? Around and around, he flew past the sarcophagus and the collars. No sign of the key. He knew how the collars would feel against his skin, the icy bite of the wordstone. Caltaine had fought it, destroyed the demon within. He could still feel the weight of his father's knee digging into his chest as he'd pinned him to the marble floor in a glass castle that no longer existed. Still feel the slick stone of the collar against his neck as it sealed. Still see Sorsha's limp hand, as he tried to reach for her one last time. The room spun and spun, his blood throbbing with it. Not a prince, not a king. The callers reached for him with invisible, clawing fingers. He was no better than them, had learned to enjoy what the Volg prince had shown him, had shredded apart good men and let the demon feed off his hate, his rage. The room began to eddy, spiraling, dragging him into its depths. Not human, not entirely. Perhaps he didn't want to be. Perhaps he would stay in another form forever. Perhaps he'd just submit. A dark wind snapped through the room, snatched him in its gaping maw and dragged him. He thrashed, screaming silently. He wouldn't be taken, not like this, not again. But it hauled him away from the collars, under the door and out of the room, into the palm of a pale hand. Dark, depthless eyes peered down at him. An enormous red mouth parted to reveal bone-white teeth. "Stupid boy," Maeve hissed. The words were a thunderclap. He panted, the gnat's body shaking from wingtip to wingtip. One press of her finger, and he'd be gone. He braced himself, waiting for it. But Maeve kept her palm open, and as she began to walk down the hall, away from the sealed chamber, she said, "What you felt in there, that is why I left their world." She gazed ahead, a shadow darkening her face. "Every day, that was what I felt." Kneeling on the floor in a corner of Maeve's chamber, Dorian hurled the contents of his stomach into the wooden bucket. Maeve watched from the chair by the fire, cruel amusement on her red lips. "You saw the horrors of the dungeons and did not fall ill," she said when he vomited again. The unspoken question shone in her eyes. "Why today?" Dorian lifted his head, wiping his mouth on the shoulder of his jacket. "Those collars." He ran a hand over his neck. "I didn't think it would affect me like that. To see them again."
"You were reckless in entering that chamber."
"Would I have been able to get out if you hadn't found me?"
He didn't ask how she'd done so, how she'd sensed the peril. That power of hers no doubt kept track of him wherever he went.
"The callers can do nothing without being attached to a host. But that room is a place of hatred and pain. The memory of it etched into the stones."
She examined her long nails.
"It snared you. You let yourself be snared."
Hadn't Keltain said nearly the same thing regarding the collars?
"It took me by surprise."
Maeve let out a hum, well aware of his lie, but she said,
"The collars are one of his more brilliant creations. Neither of his brothers was clever enough to come up with it. But Erewhon, he always had a gift for ideas."
She leaned back in the chair, crossing her legs.
"But that gift also made him arrogant."
She nodded to him.
"That he let you remain in Rifthold with your father, rather than bring you here, only proves it. He thought he could control you both from afar. Had he been more cautious, he would have brought you to Morath immediately, begun work on you."
The collars flashed before his eyes, leaking their poisoned, oily scent into the world, beckoning, waiting for him. Dorian heaved again. Maeve let out a low laugh that raked talons down his spine. His temper. Dorian mastered himself and twisted toward her.
"You gave over those spiders for his princesses, knowing what they'd endure, knowing how it would feel to be trapped like that, albeit in a different manner."
"How?" He didn't say.
"How could you do that when you knew that sort of terror?"
Maeve fell silent for a moment.
and he could have sworn something like regret passed over her face.
I would not have done it, unless my need to prove my loyalty compelled me.
Her attention drifted to where Damaris hung at his side.
You do not wish to verify my claim?
Dorian didn't touch the golden hilt.
Do you want me to?
She clicked her tongue.
You are different indeed. I wonder if some of the Volg did cross over when your father bred your mother.
Dorian cringed. He still hadn't dared to ask Damaris about it, whether he was human, whether it mattered now.
Why?
He asked, gesturing to the keep around them.
Why does Erewhon do any of this?
A week after he'd asked the Volg King himself, Dorian still wanted to, needed to know.
Because he can. Because Erewhon delights in such things.
You made it sound as if he was the mildest of all three brothers.
He is.
She ran a hand over her throat.
Orcus and Mantix are the ones who taught him all he knows. Should they return here, what Erewhon creates in these mountains will seem like lambs.
He'd heeded that warning from Kaltain, at least. He hadn't dared venture into the caverns beyond the valley, to the stone altars and the monstrosities Erewhon crafted upon them. He asked,
You never had children? With Orcus?
Does my future husband truly wish to know?
Dorian settled back on his heels.
I wish to understand my enemy.
She weighed his words.
I did not allow my body to ripen, to ready for children. A small rebellion, and my first against Orcus.
Are the Volg princes and princesses the offspring of the other kings?
Some are, some are not. No worthy heir has stepped forward. Though who knows what has occurred in their world in these millennia.
Their world, not her own.
The princes Erewhon summoned have not been strong, not as they were. I am certain it annoys Erewhon to no end.
Which is why he has brought over the princesses?
A nod.
The females are the deadliest, but harder to contain within a host.
The white band of skin on his neck seemed to burn, but he kept his stomach down, this time.
Why did you leave your world?
She blinked at him, as if surprised.
What?
He asked. She angled her head.
It has been a long, long time since I conversed with someone who knows me for what I am, and with someone whose mind remained wholly their own.
Even Aelin?
A muscle in her slim jaw feathered.
Even Aelin of the Wildfire. I could not infiltrate her mind entirely, but little things, those I could convince her to see.
Why did you capture and torture her?
Such a simple way of describing what had happened in Eelway and after it.
Because she would never agree to work with me. And she would never have protected me from Erewhon or the Volg.
You're strong. Why not protect yourself? Use those spiders to your advantage.
Because our kind only fears certain gifts. Mine, alas, are not those things.
She toyed with a strand of her black hair.
I usually keep another fey female with me, one who has powers that work against the Volg, different from those Aelin Galathinius possesses.
That she didn't specify what those powers were told Dorian not to waste his breath in asking her.
She swore the blood oath to me long ago, and has rarely left my side since. But I did not dare bring her to Morath. To have her here would not have convinced Erewhon that I came in good faith.
She twirled the strand of hair around a finger.
So you see, I am as defenseless against Erewhon as you.
Dorian highly doubted that. But he rose to his feet at last, aiming for the table where water and food had been laid out. A fine spread for a demon king's castle in the dead of winter. He poured himself a glass of water and gulped down the contents.
Is this Erewhon's true form?
In a manner of speaking. We are not like the human and fey, where your souls are invisible, unseen. Our souls have a shape to them. We have bodies that we can fashion around them, adorn them like jewelry. The form you see on Erewhon was always his preferred decoration.
What do your souls look like beneath?
You would find them displeasing.
He suppressed a shudder.
I suppose that makes us shapeshifters, too,
Maeve mused, as Dorian aimed for the chair beside hers. He'd spent his nights sleeping on the floor before the fire, one eye watching the queen dozing in the canopied bed behind him. But she had made no move to harm him. Not one.
Do you feel Volg or Fey?
I am what I am.
For a heartbeat, he could almost glimpse the weight of her eons of existence in her eyes.
But who do you wish to be?
A careful question.
Not like Erewhon or his brothers. I never have.
That's not exactly an answer.
Do you know who and what you wish to be?
A challenge and genuine question.
I'm figuring it out,
he said. Strange. So strange to have this conversation.
Sparing them both for the time being, Dorian rubbed at his face.
The key is in his tower. I'm sure of it.
Maeve's mouth tightened. Dorian said,
There is no way in, not with the guards. And I've flown the exterior enough to know there are no windows, no cracks for me to even creep through.
He held her otherworldly stare, did not shrink from it.
We need to get in, if only to confirm that it's there.
She'd once held the keys. She knew what they felt like. That she had come so close then.
And I suppose you expect me to do that?
He crossed his arms.
I can think of no one else that Erewhon would admit inside.
Maeve's solitary blink was her only sign of surprise.
To seduce and betray a king. One of the oldest tricks in the book, as you humans say.
Can Erewhon be seduced by anyone?
He could have sworn disgust flitted over her pale face before she said,
He can.
They did not waste time, did not wait. And even Dorian found himself unable to look away as Maeve flicked a hand at herself and her purple gown melted away, replaced by a sheer, flowing black dress. Little more than a robe. Golden thread had been woven through it, artfully concealing the parts of her that only the one who removed the garment would see. And when she turned from the mirror, her face was grave.
You will not like what you are about to witness.
Then she slung her cloak around her, hiding that lush body and sinful gown, and swept out the door. He shifted into a slithering insect, swift and flexible, and trailed her, lingering at her heels as Maeve wound through the halls, to the base of that tower. He tucked into a crack in the black wall as Maeve said to the Volg posted outside.
You know who I am, what I am. Tell him I have come.
He could have sworn Maeve's hands trembled slightly. But one of the guards, whom Dorian had never once seen so much as blink, turned to the door, knocked once, and strode inside. He emerged moments later, resumed his post, and said nothing. Maeve waited. Then strolling footsteps sounded from the tower interior. And when the door opened again, the putrid wind and swirling darkness within threatened to send him running. Erewhon, still clad in his clothes despite the late hour, lifted his brows.
We have a meeting tomorrow, sister.
Maeve took a step closer. I did not come to discuss war.
Erewhon stilled, and then said to the guards,
Leave us.
Chapter 74. As one, the guards outside Erewhon's tower walked away. Alone, the Volg King blocking the doorway to his tower, Maeve said,
Does that mean I am welcome?
She loosened her grip on her cloak, the front folds falling open to reveal the sheer gown. Erewhon's golden eyes surveyed every inch, then her face.
Though you may not believe so, you are my brother's wife.
Dorian blinked at that, at the honor of the demon within the male body.
I do not have to be,
Maeve murmured, and Dorian knew then why she had warned him before they'd left. A shake of her head, and her thick black hair turned golden. Her moonwhite skin darkened slightly to a sun-kissed tan. The angular face rounded slightly, dark eyes lightening to turquoise and gold. We could play like this, if you'd prefer. Even the voice belonged to Aelin. Erewhon's eyes flared, his chest rising in an uneven breath. Would that appeal to you? Maeve gave a half-smile that Dorian had only seen on the Queen of Terrasen's face. Disgust and horror roiled through him. He knew there was no true lust in Erewhon's eyes for Aelin. No true desire beyond the claiming, the pain. Maeve's glamour changed again. Golden hair paled to white, turquoise eyes burning to gold. Icy rage, pure and undiluted, tore through Dorian, as Manon now stood before the Volg King. Or maybe this form, beautiful beyond all reckoning. She peered down at herself, smiling. Was she your intended queen when this war was over? The wing leader? Or merely a prize breeding mare? Erewhon's nostrils flared, and Dorian focused upon his breathing, on the stones beneath him. Anything to keep his magic from erupting at the desire, true desire, that tightened Erewhon's face. But if it got Maeve inside that tower, Erewhon blinked, and that desire winked out.
You are my brother's wife, he said, no matter whose skin you wear. Should you need release, I'll send someone to your chambers.
With that, he shut the door and did not emerge again. Maeve brought Dorian to her meeting the next morning. In her cloak pocket, as a field mouse, Dorian kept still and listened.
After all that fuss last night, Erewhon was saying, you turned away what I sent you.
Indeed, not 15 minutes after they'd returned to Maeve's tower, a knock had sounded. A blank-faced young man had stood there, beautiful and cold. Not a prince, not with the ring he wore. Just an enslaved human. Maeve had sent him away, though not from any kindness. No, Dorian knew the man had been spared of his duties because of his presence, and nothing more. Maeve had told him as much before falling asleep.
I had hoped for wine, Maeve said smoothly. Not watered down ale.
Erewhon chuckled, and paper rustled.
I have been considering further details of this alliance, sister.
The title was a barb, a taunt of last night's rejection.
And I have been wondering, what else shall you bring to it? You stand to gain more than I do, after all. And offering up 6 of your spiders is relatively little, even if they have been receptive hosts to the princesses.
Dorian's ears strained as he waited for Maeve's reply. She said quietly,
more tensely than he'd heard her speak before.
What is it that you want, brother?
Bring the rest of the Karen Kui. Open a portal and transport them here.
Not all will be such willing hosts.
Not hosts. Soldiers. I do not intend to take chances. There will be no second phase.
Dorian's stomach twisted.
Maeve hesitated.
There is a chance, you know, that even with all of this, even if I summon the Karen Kui, you might face Aelin Galathinius and fail. A pause. Aniel has confirmed your darkest fears. I heard what occurred, the power she summoned to halt that river.
Maeve hummed.
That was meant for me, you know, the blast. But should she summon it again, let's say, against you on a field of battle, would you be able to walk away, brother?
That is why this press northward with your spiders shall be vital, was Erewhon's only reply.
Perhaps, Maeve countered, but do not forget that you and I together could win. Without the spiders, without the princesses, even Aelin Galathinius could not stand against us both. We can go to the north and obliterate her. Keep the spiders in reserve for other kingdoms, other times.
She did not wish to sacrifice them. As if she held some fondness for the beings who had remained loyal for millennia.
And beyond that, Maeve went on. You know much about walking between worlds, but not everything.
Her hand slid into the pocket, and Dorian braced himself as her fingers ran over his back, as if telling him to listen.
And I suppose I will only find out when you and I have won this war,
Erewhon said at last. Yes, though I am willing to give you a display. Tomorrow, once I have prepared.
Again, that horrible silence. Maeve said,
They are too strong, too mighty, for me to open a portal between realms to allow them through. They would destabilize my magic too greatly in the effort to bring all that they are into this world. But I could show them to you, just for a moment. I could show you your brothers, Orcus and Mantix. Chapter 75.
Darrow and the other Terrasen lords had spent their time wisely these past few months, thank the gods, and Orinth was well stocked against the siege, marching closer with each passing hour. Food, weapons, healing supplies, plans for where the citizens might sleep should they flee into the castle. Reinforcements at the places along the city and castle walls where the ancient stone had weakened. Adian had found little at fault. Yet after a fitful night's sleep in his old room in the castle, awful and strange and cold, he was prowling one of the lower turrets as dawn broke. Up here, the wind was so much wilder, icier. Stalking, steady footsteps sounded from the archway behind him.
I spotted you up here on the way down to breakfast,
Wren said by way of greeting. The Alsbrook Court's quarters had always been in the tower adjacent to Adian's. When they'd been boys, they'd once spent a summer devising a signaling system to each other's rooms using a lantern. It was the last summer they had spent in friendship. Once it had started to become clear to Wren's father that Adian was favored to take the blood oath. And then the rivalry had begun. One summer thick as thieves and as wild. The next, endless pissing contests, everything from foot races through the courtyards to shoving in the stairwells to outright brawling in the great hall. Roe had tried to defuse it,
but Roe had never been a comfortable liar. Had refused to deny to Ren's father that Adian was the one who'd swear that oath. And by the end of that summer, even the Crown Prince had begun to look the other way when the two boys launched into yet another fight in the dirt. Not that it mattered now. Would his own father? Would Gavriel have encouraged the rivalry? He supposed it didn't matter either. But for a heartbeat, Adian tried to picture it. Gavriel here, presiding over his training. His father and Roe teaching him together. And he knew that Gavriel would have found some way to calm the competition. Much in the way he held the peace in the cadre. What manner of man would he have become, had the lion been here? Gavriel likely would have been butchered with the rest of the court. But he would have been here. A fool's path to wander down that road. Adian was who he was, and most of the time didn't mind that one bit. Roe had been his father in the ways that counted. Even if there had been times when Adian had looked at Roe and Evelyn and Aelin and still felt like a guest. Adian shook the thought from his head. Being here, in this castle, had addled him. Dragged him into a realm of ghosts. Don't expect Darrow to put out a breakfast spread like the ones we used to have, Adian said. Not that he expected or wanted one. He ate only because his body demanded he do so. Ate because it was strength, and he would need it. His people would need it before long. Ren surveyed the city, then the plain of Thoralis beyond. The still empty horizon. I'll get the archers sorted today. And ensure the soldiers at the gates know how to wield that boiling oil. Do you know how to wield it? Adian arched a brow. Ren snorted. What's to learn? You dump a giant cauldron over the side of the walls. Damage done. It certainly required a bit more skill than that. But it was better than nothing. At least Darrow had made sure they had supplies. Adian prayed they'd get the chance to use them. With Morath's witch towers, the odds were that they'd be blasted into rubble before the enemy host even reached either of the two gates into the city. What we could really use is some hellfire, Ren muttered. That'd keep them from the gates. And potentially melt everyone around them, too. Adian opened his mouth to agree. When his brows narrowed, he surveyed the plain, the horizon. Out with it, Ren said. Adian steered Ren back toward the tower entrance. We need to talk to Rolf. Not about hellfire at the southern and western gates. Not at all. They waited until cover of darkness, when Morath's spies might not spot the small band of them who crept mile after mile across the plain of Thoralis. Clad in battle black, they moved over the field that would once more become bathed in blood. When they reached the landmarks that Adian and Ren had used the daylight hours to plan out, Adian held up a hand. The silent assassins lived up to their name as Ilias signaled back and they spread out. Amongst them moved Rolf's Mycenaeans, bearing their heavy loads. But it was the shapeshifter who began to work first. Turning herself into a giant badger, bigger than a horse, who scooped out the frozen earth with skilled, strong paws. The scent of her blood filled the air, but Lysandra didn't stop digging. And when she'd finished the first pit, she moved on to the next, leaving the group of silent assassins and Mycenaeans to lay their trap, then bury it once more. The brutal wind moaned past them. Yet they worked through the night, using every minute given to them. And when they were done, they vanished back to the city, invisible once more. Morath appeared on the horizon a day later. From the castle's highest towers and walkways, every marching line could be counted, one after another after another. Her hands still bruised and bandaged from digging through frozen earth, Lysandra stood with an assortment of their allies on one of those walkways, Evangeline clinging to her. That's 15,000, Ansel of Briarcliff announced as yet another line emerged. No one said anything.
20.
Morath must be empty to now have so many here, Prince Galen murmured. Evangeline trembled, not entirely from the cold, and Lysandra tightened her arm around the girl. Down the wall of the walkway, Darrow and the other Terrison lords spoke quietly. As if sensing Lysandra's attention, Darrow threw a narrow glance her way, that then dipped to the pale-faced, shaking Evangeline. Darrow said nothing, and Lysandra didn't bother to look pleasant before he turned back to his companions.
That's 30, Ansel said.
We can count,
Rolf snipped. Ansel lifted a wine-red brow.
Can you really?
Despite the army marching on them, Lysandra's mouth twitched upward. Rolf just rolled his eyes and went back to watching the approaching army.
They won't arrive until dawn, at the earliest, Adian observed, his face grim.
She had not yet decided what form to take, where to fight. If Ilkin still flew in their ranks, then it would be a wyvern, but if closer quarters were required, then she hadn't decided. No one had asked her to be anywhere in particular, though Adian's request the other night to assist in their wild plan had been a rare reprieve from these days of waiting and dreading. She'd gladly take days of pacing instead of what approached them.
50,000, Ansel said, throwing a wry glance to Rolf.
Lysandra swallowed against the tightness in her throat. Evangeline pressed her face into Lysandra's side. And then the witch towers took form. Like massive lances jutting from the horizon, they appeared through the gray morning light. 3 of them, spread out equally amid the army that continued to flow behind them. Even Ansel stopped counting now.
I did not think it would be so terrible,
Evangeline whispered, hands digging into Lysandra's heavy cloak.
I did not think it would be so wretched.
Lysandra pressed a kiss to the top of her red gold hair,